Miss Meeks and Mr. Neil, and we're doing a podcast on the setting in Jekyll and Hyde. Because it's quite an important... Stevenson uses setting a lot, doesn't he, to reflect a lot of the different themes that run throughout the whole novella. So, where should we start?
If we start with Jekyll's house, then, because that's probably the... if we look at Jekyll's house and then the description of how Hyde's lodgings are described, because there's a clear contrast there between the two.
Yeah, so Jekyll's house has two sides, and they're very, very different, which symbolises his character. So we have the one side of the house that is the pleasant... Oh, we've got a quote here. It has the pleasantest room in London. That's on page 14. And he's obviously... We know that he's well-respected. We know that he's reasonably wealthy. And his home reflects that on this one side. But then on the other side, we've got his laboratory, which is at the back of the house. And that's where his kind of dark deeds, his secretive, underhand, his scientific heresies go on. Scientific balderdash?
What
Lanyon says. So this goes on in the in his laboratory, which is at the back of the house. And also at the back of the house is this separate entrance. And this separate entrance... is for Hyde, and it doesn't have a knocker, so it doesn't have a door knocker. Mm-hmm. And it also, at the back of the house, there are no windows, so again we've got that element of secrecy. We've got, you know, he's a bit Hyde being hidden away.
Yep. Yeah.
We've got that sort of unfriendly, unwelcoming. The house is described as sort of black and dingy compared to the front, which is lovely street welcoming entrance.
And I think the point you used, a word, Miss Meeks, that sums it up perfectly, it was facade, which the root of that word is from face. And the idea is that it is a face, it's a front that's being put on to pretend to be this very respectable, high society doctor, because of course doctors were among the social elite in Victorian England. But it is just that, it's just a front, it's just a facade, because under the surface is everything at the back of the house, which is representative of his personality and his deviant interests that he wants to hide from society.
Yeah. If we just look, I've just got a couple of quotes if you wanted to remember. So the front is described as having an air of wealth. And then we've got the back, which has the back door, which is blistered and disdained. So I think that the use of the term blistered there really just sums it all up, doesn't it? You know, like it's rotting away and, horrible and this illness and...
Yeah, it suffers from some unmentionable disease of some sort.
Yeah. Okay, so we don't know an awful lot about Utterson's house, really at all. We know that he has a business room, but we don't spend a lot of time there. And actually, I think that reflects the fact that Utterson, we don't know an awful lot about Utterson.
No.
We know that he's a lawyer. We know who his friendship groups are, but it's quite unusual that we see the story unfold through Utterson's eyes when actually it's not really about him.
Mm.
So I think that's probably why we don't know a lot about his house. If we move on then to where Hyde lives.
His Hyde.
It's described as having furnished with luxury and good taste. However, the rooms have been ransacked and are in a state of chaos. So actually, we've got... Obviously, the elements of Jekyll are still in this horrible Hyde lodgings, but that we've got that combination of something that should be nice, but is still so tainted because it's to do with Hyde. And actually, when we come to Hyde's house, there's quite a nice extract when Utterson is driving the police there, and it's in the Carew murder case. So is that chapter 4 or 5?
I forget.
I think it's chapter 4. And we've got Mr. Utterson driving there, and he talks about when he's sort of arriving in Hyde Street. There's lots of really, really good example here of how Stevenson uses setting to get to set that tone, set that gothic feel of a place. And we've got, he refers to it as the first fog of the season when they're approaching Hyde's house, which I think is quite significant because this is where we're really, this is where sort of goodness and light and stuff really starts to leave the story when we have this horrible murder. He's talking about the, he's using pathetic fallacy when he's talking about the weather, but he refers to something that is lowered over heaven. Okay, so literally, rather than talking about the sun being blocked out, he's referring to it as heaven, which shows that when he's arriving in this part of town, there's no access to goodness. And we've got lots of personification of the elements. So we've got the wind was continually charging, showing this kind of aggression. And we've also got embattled vapours. So the cab crawled. So there's lots of pathetic fallacy when we're arriving to show how the weather here is reflecting the horrible state of affairs that are in this part of London.
And it's also the fog in a lot of Victorian novels, and particularly true of the time, having going through the Industrial Revolution, where all the factories and everything had moved to London. It was, generally speaking, it was very common for it to be in fog and smoke. So the fog and smoke hides, again, playing on the name of the character, hides a lot of the obvious things and is used as a blanket or to keep things from us, which again plays into the gothic convention of sort of suspense about what's behind the fog, what's behind the curtain.
And also I think that, you know, when you do picture this, the idea of fog masking, you know, it adds that dangerous element. And London is certainly this part of London is seemed to be really quite frightening, quite nightmarish. And that reflects when, if you listen to the Context podcast, where when Stevenson grew up in Edinburgh, the that city was also split into two and kind of had this this other part where people would go to commit all of their dodgy deeds, and that was very much dangerous, and that comes through in these settings.
Yeah, I mean the talking about the lamps, for example, in this chapter, the Carew murder case, talks about the lamps which had never been extinguished or had been kindled afresh to combat this mournful reinvasion of darkness. So the idea of, again, light, which is a theme in literature generally, light representing hope, optimism, all the good things in life.
Yeah.
But these candles haven't been extinguished and had been trying to combat, again going back to the idea of these embattled vapours, this sort of conflict with nature. Light is there trying to fight it, but we get the impression it is failing.
Yeah, definitely. And again, if you were to have a question on the idea of the theme of good and evil or duality, we could have the use of pathetic fallacy here where we've got light versus darkness. Okay, we just paused it, so we're just going to move to now page 9 for a slightly different description that we can use for setting.
So this is the story of the door, and it's interesting that this chapter is named after a setting in itself. It's as if this door, which ordinarily would be a fairly sort of mundane thing, holds secrets behind it. The door is signified and is representative again of the things that hide behind the surface. Enfield goes on to say, "I've studied the place for myself. It seems scarcely a house." So again, not very welcoming. It's there to put people off. And this is, of course, the place that Mr. Hyde goes to get the money to pay off following the assault on the little girl. There's no other door. Nobody comes in or out of that. But once in a great while, the gentleman of my adventure. Three windows looking on the court of the first floor. None below. They're always shut, but they're clean. And then there's a chimney which is generally smoking. So somebody must live there. And yet it's not so sure, for the buildings are so packed together in that court, it's hard to say where one ends and the other begins. And I particularly like this bit. It's hard to say where one ends and the other begins.
That's such a good quote, because that actually represents Jekyll and Hyde.
Yeah, I think it's prophetic of the end, where actually we don't know really who's won. We don't know whether Hyde is elements of Jekyll or Jekyll is elements of Hyde. And I think it sums up really nicely. But it's also prophesying at the start of the novel that it is to become more complicated.
I think that's something that it's not the sort of thing that you would get on your first reading.
No.
But then once you've got to the end and you look for stuff like that, you can think how clever those little...
Yeah.
That will be considered. That would have been considered by Stevenson. So
oh, yeah, absolutely. That is intentional, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else for setting?
We talked about the weather, and it reminds me of... The Woman in Black, really, which again is that sort of gothic style, talking about the idea of it's as if the weather is conspiring against all the good in the novella. So again, this mournful reinvasion of darkness that we talked about earlier and ties in with Embattled implies some sort of a fight between good and evil, which we said that the weather can represent, the weather versus the light can represent this fight between good and evil. And then when they talk about the cab drawing up, going back to the Carew murder case, the cab drawing up, there are things describing the locals, many ragged children huddled in the doorways. So, and this idea of huddled makes us think of sort of seeking refuge, trying to avoid exposure to whatever malevolent force is
more
out
secrecy,
there.
More secrecy, yeah.
I should have morning glass. And then the next moment the fog settled down again upon that part as brown as umber and cut him off from his backguardedly surroundings. So it's as if the fog is acting, as I said, against the characters. And then once the character's been cut off, the next sentence, this was the home of Henry Jekyll's favourite, a man who was heir to £250,000. So it's as if by arriving at the property, he's been cut off from the rest of London. And it's now just him.
Well,
and...
when we went through this extract at, on the weekend, we said that this was actually quite a nice juxtaposition between there's like a lot of detail, a lot of negativity in the description, and then it's almost the shock that Utterson feels that this was the home of Henry Jekyll's favourite, a man who was heir to £250,000. It's like disbelief that somewhere so depraved...
Yeah.
Is somewhere where someone he respects and cares for and believes he knows has his favourite, his, you know, person to inherit his money living.
I think just finally, it's just jumped out where earlier in the passage it describes it as the dismal quarter of Soho. Soho is notoriously, not so much now, but notoriously was the sort of the home of corruption and vice and sort of drug-taking,
even
drinking.
Until, I would say, about 10 years ago.
We used until to be fairly well, recently, yes.
Yeah, it's where, you know, it was almost the equivalent of a red light district.
Yeah, associated
else.
With sort of moral depravity and everything that Victorian society hated.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so hope that was helpful. And we'll be doing a few more in the run-up to your first exam. So please listen. Even if you don't make notes, you might... learn something.
Hopefully.
Good luck.